Today's a WREL weather alert day. We have a level 3 risk for severe storms, mainly this evening. We'll walk through the timeline.
Renters in Raleigh are catching a break. What a new report reveals about prices in the capital city.
Also, authorities launch a formal investigation into the cause of the implosion of the Titan submersible, as one woman talks about losing her husband and son in that tragedy.
We have a level 3 risk for severe storms for late today. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner is in the WREL Severe Weather Center with a look at when storms arrive and what we can expect. It looks like it's going to be mainly an evening event for us around dinner time up until midnight or so, depending on where you are. Damaging wind, a straight line wind, is going to be our biggest threat. We can see winds at 60 plus miles per hour that can knock down trees and cause power outages. Quarter size hail is possible. Tornadoes are a low risk. We're going to take a look at the history of this storm and what it's done back to our west. And I'll show you the difference between how many reports of wind damage versus how many reports of tornadoes there have been. But it is a level 3 risk, something that we want to take very seriously. Those straight line winds can do as much damage as a weak tornado. So we'll be tracking these all the way through the evening, and it does affect our entire viewing area. Here's a look at the big picture right now. We take a look at there's a lot of activity happening on the west end of this front back here across parts of Louisiana, and not as much happening on the north end of this front where we are, and that's definitely great news. There was a lot of activity late last night, a lot of strong to severe thunderstorms across parts of Kentucky and Tennessee. That rain moved into the mountains and then fizzled out. We can watch the loop of this, and you can see everything for the most part has fizzled at this point. Now, we do have a lot of high thin cloud cover, and that high thin cloud cover could keep us from seeing a lot of additional daytime heating this afternoon that would destabilize the atmosphere. What that means is that we would have a lesser chance of severe storms. Here's a look at dual Doppler 5000 radar. Everything is quiet across the whole state right now. We take a look at Futurecast, and you can definitely see some cloud cover. Possibly a quick little shower rolls through. There's nothing happening out there right now. But definitely once we get to, say, 5, 6 o'clock, we might see an isolated shower or thunderstorm. We're looking at the main line beginning at around 7, and it looks fairly sparse there at 7 o'clock, but it does begin to form some stronger cells at around 8 o'clock, right around Durham and Chapel Hill and Raleigh at 9 o'clock. We'll continue to see that cluster of stronger thunderstorms moving eastward and starting to push toward the eastern part of the viewing area by midnight. Eventually, it moves on out. Here's 2 a.m., though, with a potential for maybe a few lingering thunderstorms. Most likely, they would not be severe at that point. Here's a look at our hour-by-hour rain chances. Certainly, as we get into 5, 6 o'clock, there could be a couple of isolated storms that bubble up, but it's much more likely that between 7 and 8, we start to see that line forming, and it moves on through the area by around midnight or so. So we'll continue to talk about what this storm has done in the past and what it looks like it could do here.
And you can plan ahead for severe weather with the WREL weather app that allows you to watch radar in real time, see when storms are approaching your area. It is free wherever you download your apps.
And happening right now in the WREL Live Center, we are following breaking news out of Colorado. The gunman accused of killing 5 people and injuring 17 others in that LGBTQ nightclub, Club Q in Colorado Springs, has pleaded guilty. Anderson Lee Aldrich has pleaded guilty to 5 counts of murder, 46 counts of attempted murder, and 2 counts of bias-motivated crime. He faces life in prison on those murder charges. This all comes 7 months after that shooting at Club Q that happened on November 19th, 2022. Now, this plea, he pleaded guilty, should close the chapter on one of the worst mass killings in Colorado history.
Renters are breathing a sigh of relief in Raleigh. A new report shows monthly charges dropped 3% from near record highs. WREL's Ken Smith spoke with a local realtor about what this could mean for our future, Ken.
You know, Jeff, there's some good news and bad news here. First, the good news. You just mentioned rental rates dropping by 3% after record highs a couple of years ago. The bad news, and I don't even want to call it bad news, let's call it the not-so-good news, is rental rates are still extremely high. This Realty.com report indicates the slight decline marks what it calls a sea change from double-digit surges following the COVID pandemic. So let's take a look at it by the numbers. Prices for a two-bedroom rental in the capital city declined 2.9% to $1,558 from May of last year. Nationally, in July, rents peaked at nearly $1,780. Durham was not included in the study, by the way. And again, the report noted rents are still nearly 25% higher than before the pandemic.
we saw a 20% year-over-year increase 2 years in a row here in the Triangle. So although they've dropped slightly, I mean, pennies on the dollar, really. A lot of investors in the rental market is still really up there, I would say, compared to just a few years ago.
Lusk is an investment specialist with the Papalardo Real Estate Group. He says it's still a case of supply and demand, not enough inventory compared to the number of people moving to the Triangle on a daily basis. In addition, he says the recent high interest rates on purchasing a house is adding to the glut of people needing to rent. So, Jeff, yes, slight decline, but rents are still very high.
It's all relative, right? All right, Ken, thanks for the update. So if you're looking for a new job, Carrie is hosting its virtual diversity job fair right now, featuring more than 25 leading companies, including AT&T, Chevron, and Google. The job fair runs until 2 p.m. For more information on how you can join in, visit jobfairx.com.
President Biden will be back on the road this week as he ramps up his reelection campaign. Today, he plans to make an announcement linked to high-speed internet. The announcement comes 1 week after his administration offered nearly $1 billion in grants to expand internet access in rural areas.
New abortion restrictions, including a 12-week ban, are set to take effect in North Carolina this Saturday. A lot could change between now and then, though, and WRL's Kelsey Coffey explains this important week for the future of abortion rights in our state.
The state Senate will have its third and final vote on that amended bill later tonight here at the legislative building. From there, the timeline is going to move quickly. If the bill passes the Senate tonight, a House vote is expected to happen Wednesday. Then it will move on to the governor's desk. Now, Governor Cooper will have 10 days to sign or veto it. This new version of the bill makes the abortion pill legal until the 12-week mark. The current law says only up to 10 weeks. It also says it's okay to help a woman get an abortion in another state if the procedure is legal there. These changes are coming after Planned Parenthood filed a lawsuit to block the abortion bill. An emergency hearing on that is set for Wednesday. It's not likely that the governor will veto the law before the hearing. This means the bill won't take effect on Saturday as originally planned, but if the governor vetoes it, then it would be overruled. Kelsey Coffey, WRL News in Raleigh.
Governor Roy Cooper is in Charlotte today to talk about the transition to clean energy. He will join U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm for a clean energy roundtable. A recent study found North Carolina is fourth in the country in solar energy production. Growth has slowed in recent years, but Duke Energy says it plans to double solar generation over the next decade.
A full investigation into the cause of that submersible disaster near the site of the Titanic is underway. Officials are now trying to determine what went wrong that led to the deaths of all five people on board. NBC's Emily Ikeda has that story.
With the multinational inquiry already underway, this morning, the U.S. Coast Guard says it's convening a Marine Board of Investigation, its highest investigative body, to figure out what caused the deep-sea disaster involving the Titanic touring submersible Titan.
The board will first and primarily work to determine the cause of this Marine casualty and the five associated deaths. It can make recommendations to the proper authorities to pursue civil or criminal sanctions as necessary.
Authorities say they're reviewing data and voice recorders from the mothership, Polar Prince, which chartered the sub out to its launch point, and conducting interviews with crew members. Pelagic Research Services, who helped in the attempted rescue effort, sharing these images of its remotely operated vehicle, Odysseus, from a recent dive. The company calling the Titan recovery missions remarkably difficult and risky. Now, experts are focusing on the submersible's carbon fiber hull. Amid allegations that its owner, Stockton Rush, who was among the five killed in the underwater disaster, apparently ignored repeated warnings about the vessel. The company, which is closed indefinitely, says they have no additional information to share at this time.
They didn't have any external bodies, governmental or otherwise, overseeing what they're doing.
The mother of Suleiman Dawood, the teenager who died with his father, Shahzada, in the Titan, opening up overnight, saying she was originally supposed to be in the sub instead of her son.
It was supposed to be Shahzada and I going down. But then I stepped back and gave the space to Suleiman because he really wanted to go.
Christine Dawood also remembering her last moments with them.
We just hugged and joked, actually, because Shahzada was so excited to go down. He was like a little child. I missed him. I really, really missed him.
That was Emily Iketa reporting. Firefighters in Gaston County are working to figure out the cause of an overnight fire at a lithium plant. Crews responded to flames that broke out at the Livent Corporation lithium plant in Bessemer City shortly after 1 a.m. All the workers are safe. So far, no injuries have been reported. The smoke is not considered hazardous.
Three people are in temporary housing after a plane crashed into their home on the North Carolina coast. That plane went down shortly after takeoff yesterday afternoon from Cape Fear Regional Jetport in Southport. The house caught on fire after the crash, but crews put that fire out within about 15 minutes. There's no word on the cause or the condition of the pilot, who was the only person on board. Next at noon, brand new information out of the Idaho College murders, how court documents now suggest a different man might have been there.
Also, drugs sniffed out by dogs at the southern border. How much cocaine was found in an ice cream maker?
Plus, rebellion in Russia. How the Kremlin is reacting to an armed uprising over the weekend.
Download the new WRAL streaming apps on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV.
There are new developments in the closely watched Idaho College murders case. In new court documents, lawyers for the accused killer are now claiming other male DNA was found at the scene. NBC's Aaron McLaughlin has details.
Counts 2, 3, 4, and 5, murder in the first degree.
A legal battle over evidence playing out between Brian Koberger, working to clear his name in the murder of four University of Idaho students, and the state fighting to prove his guilt. In new court documents, Koberger's attorney accusing the state of hiding its entire case by seeking to protect information about the genetic genealogy investigation they say led them to Koberger.
The state here is using a relatively new kind of DNA technology. So this is exactly the kind of thing the defense will argue that they need, because if this is emerging technology, they need all the facts they can if they're going to challenge it.
In a court filing earlier this month, prosecutors said that Koberger's DNA is a statistical match to DNA found on the knife sheath at the scene of the murders last November. In the filing, Koberger's lawyer said that two additional males' DNA was found within the house, as well as another unknown male's DNA on a glove found outside the house, days after the murder. Koberger's attorney also writing that police were investigating many various possible suspects, adding that many of them provided DNA and at least one had his DNA surreptitiously taken from a discarded cigarette.
Your Honor, we will be standing silent.
The judge entered a not guilty plea for Koberger after he opted to stand silent at his arraignment. He's accused of murdering Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonsalves, Zanna Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin as they slept in an off-campus home in Moscow, Idaho on November 13th. An expansive gag order has blanketed the case since January, challenged by both the media and one of the victim's family's lawyers. On Friday, the judge upheld the gag order but narrowed it, allowing attorneys in the case to comment on matters like scheduling and correcting misinformation about their client. Tomorrow, both sides will face off in court again, as Koberger's lawyers argue for the release of materials they say they need to defend the suspected killer.
Texas border officials say they've seized a stash of cocaine that was hidden in an ice cream maker. Agents reported finding 146 pounds of cocaine at an El Paso cargo facility last week. The drugs were being taken from Mexico to the U.S. and are valued at about $1.2 million. The stash was detected through X-ray scanning and a canine search. The suspect faces smuggling charges. Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, is recovering after getting a mastectomy. She announced she was going to have the surgery on her podcast, which was recorded a week ago but released today. A spokesman for Ferguson says she was diagnosed with breast cancer during a regular mammogram. She is otherwise symptom-free and is encouraging people to get regular checkups.
People across the South and Midwest are dealing with brutal triple-digit temperatures and dangerous tornadoes. NBC's Priscilla Thompson reports on the deadly heat impacting millions.
This morning, terrifying tornadoes and sweltering summer heat combining for a brutal 1-2 punch of wild weather.
I don't think we're done climbing on temperature.
Temperatures across the South again topping triple digits, baking some hard-hit communities for the third straight week. Tens of millions facing even more heat alerts in the coming days,
This year, it feels higher than regular.
In sweltering southwest Texas, the National Park Service says a 14-year-old boy got sick, lost consciousness, and died while hiking in Big Bend National Park, where temperatures hit nearly 120 degrees. The boy's stepfather rushed to find help and was found dead, officials say, after his car crashed over an embankment. Both deaths remain under investigation. As Southerners hope for relief from the heat, the Midwest is reeling from another round of dangerous twisters.
I think it's going to miss us.
Communities in Minnesota and Indiana hit by multiple tornadoes. Residents forced to take cover.
Slammed the door at the last minute, locked it, ran in and jumped over my little boy in the bathtub.
And in Florida.
Oh no!
New video shows the terrifying moments a fast-moving storm swept aboard a Royal Caribbean cruise ship leaving Port Canaveral. Luckily, the cruise line says there were no serious injuries, and the ship set sail as scheduled. As this summer of severe weather shows no signs of slowing down.
I'm talking about some of the heat in our area. We haven't had to deal with it too much, but feels like in the triple digits for us.
Right, so it's hot and steamy for us, but that's really the least of our weather worries today. We do have a level 3 risk for severe weather. And Elizabeth, this is way out of the norm for this time of year.
You know, we only see, on average, a level 3 risk twice a year. And of course, we usually see that during our severe storm season, which is March to May. So this is highly unusual to see this level 3, especially this time of year. But we have some cold air that's going to be moving in aloft, and that's going to help to fuel some stronger thunderstorms. Damaging wind will be the biggest threat. We could see tornadoes, an isolated threat of tornadoes, and the potential for some hail as well. We take a look at the big picture again. Right now, we have a lot of storms here over Louisiana, but the storms from overnight just to our west have fizzled out now, and we're just waiting for daytime heating to help fire that up again. Let's take a look at what's happening out there right now. We'll zoom in again to dual Doppler 5000 radar, and the radar is quiet. I feel like once we get to 4 or 5 o'clock, we might start to see a little bit of activity, potentially north of the I-85 corridor, but it could be as late as 7 o'clock before we really start to see any of these storms popping up. Right now, we're looking at some cloud cover out across the area. Futurecast is showing that tiny little shower that rolls through. I think that's left over from some of the rain that we saw in the mountains overnight last night and early this morning, so I'm not sure that we're going to see that sprinkle. We may end up seeing a little bit of clearing. We have some cloud cover in spots right now. The more sunshine we see, the less stable the atmosphere, and the more likely the storms are to be strong. Here's 5 o'clock. At this point, you can see how far to the west that line is. And instead of being a really solid line of thunderstorms, the model has started to break it up a little bit and make it a little more cellular. So at 7 o'clock, we're starting to see some of that develop back to the west. Look at the coverage at 8 o'clock. It isn't huge, but you can see the pink color contour right there. So this could be a severe storm right here. This storm could produce some wind damage, knock down trees, cause power outages. Now, you have to realize that we get this model updated once an hour. We get lots of new data here. And so the next time it might be in a slightly different location. But just know that we may start to see some of these strong storms around 7, 8 o'clock. You can see at 9 o'clock moving across the Triangle area, becoming a little bit more of a line from Rocky Mount through Raleigh at around 10. At 11 o'clock, all of that starts to slide off to the east. And again, a little bit more of a line there at midnight and then moving out by around 2 a.m. or so with a few lingering isolated showers back to the west. So what is a level 3? How is it different from a level 1 and level 2? Level 1 means that there's really only a very slim chance of seeing severe storms. So by the time you get to a level 3, definitely more numerous, more widespread storms, and these storms are more likely to cause damage. That's what we're talking about when we're looking at a level 3. We have a little bit of cloud cover and some sunshine. Again, the more sunshine that we see as we're looking across Wake County right now, the more unstable the atmosphere will be. Right now it's 84 degrees, and our dew point's pretty high at 68. We're going to climb to 94 this afternoon, but our temperatures on the left and the heat index is on the right. So it feels like 91 in Fayetteville and Clinton. It feels like 91 in Goldsboro, while temperatures currently are mostly in the mid 80s. It's likely that by 2 o'clock, it'll feel more like 99. And by this afternoon, when we hit 94, it could feel like 102. We really haven't had to talk about the heat index much, but it will be on the high side today. Once the storm system moves out, you can see our temperatures are cooler until we get to next weekend. And next weekend, it's hotter with another chance for thunderstorms. We'll keep talking about, of course, this level 3. What I'm going to show you coming up in just a little while is the history with this storm and how many more severe thunderstorm warnings that we've seen versus tornado warnings.
Elizabeth, thank you. A Fuquay-Varina woman was hit with a $6,000 repair bill that should have cost her nothing. Coming up, why her recalled Kia was not covered by a major class action settlement and the important lesson any car owner can learn from this.
Then new information surfacing about a shooting that left a 17-year-old dead and a 15-year-old hurt. What court documents say led up to the deadly shooting on the American Tobacco Trail? And U.S. safety regulators are investigating Ford's fix for hundreds of thousands of recalled Explorer SUVs. The problem at the center of this investigation.
Plus, Costco is changing a key staple of do-it-yourself shopping, and some customers aren't happy. The changes that has some shoppers in a tizzy.
Spider-Man is back at number one at the box office, and safety regulators are looking at Ford's recall of some Explorers. Those are among today's business headlines with Maribel Aber.
Safety regulators are investigating Ford's recall of almost 300,000 Explorer SUVs. The move is an effort to see if the repairs made to the vehicles were adequate. The investigation comes after regulators received two complaints from owners about losing control of their vehicles following the repair. In one case, the Explorer reportedly would slam to a complete stop at speeds of up to 40 miles per hour. Ford initially recalled the Explorers over a year ago to fix a problem with the rear axle. 7.5 million Baby Shark toys are being recalled, this after a dozen reports of children suffering injuries after falling or sitting on the full-size version of the bath product. The injuries included lacerations and puncture wounds. The recall covers 6.5 million full-size versions of the Robo Alive Junior Baby Shark bath toy and 1 million of the mini version. The toys are imported from China by Zuru, a California-based company. Spider-Man climbed back into the number one spot at the weekend box office. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse rang up $19.3 million in ticket sales in its fourth weekend. That was enough to beat out Pixar's animated Elemental, which took in $18.5 million. The Flash continued to disappoint with $15.3 million in ticket sales to finish in third place. And those are your business headlines. I'm Maribel Aber at the NASDAQ Market Site.
The Boost the Mood ceramic mugs that were sold exclusively at Ulta Beauty stores nationwide and online are being recalled. Michael Giordano International is recalling the mugs because they might pose a fire hazard. The company says they're mislabeled as microwave safe. But if they're microwaved, the metallic print on the mug can spark. The recall involves 10-ounce ceramic mugs in navy blue with a gold metallic handle. Costco is revamping some of its self-serve checkout lanes, and the changes are frustrating some customers. Some shoppers complain that they're required to use the tabletop scanner for their items and then have to ask workers for help with bulky purchases. Some customers said workers rang up everything in their cart with a handheld scanner, even though it was supposed to be self-checkout. Some changes are meant to help avoid scanner fraud, skipped items, or line slowdowns.
We have a level 3 risk for severe storms. We typically get an update from the Storm Prediction Center around 12:30. I'll let you know if there are any changes coming up.
Plus, a mom is raising awareness of something called informal removal, how she says some schools are using the system to keep special needs children out of the classroom.
First, here's a look at the winning lottery numbers. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're waiting for an update on our threat for severe weather today. The Storm Prediction Center is expected to release new information at 12:30. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRL Severe Weather Center with a look at when storms arrive and what to expect with this level 3 severe weather risk.
It is unusual for us to have a severe level 3, especially this time of year, but any time of year. It's just a rare occasion for us. It's not looking like a severe tornado threat, but it does look like we're going to see a lot of straight line winds that could cause damage, knocking down trees and causing power outages. We take a look at those severe threats again. Winds at 60 to even 80 miles per hour are possible this evening with the thunderstorms. Hail is possible too. Quarter size hail is the size at which it's considered severe. Quarter size hail can do some damage to cars. If you happen to have a garage, go ahead and put your car in it if you possibly can. And then it's a low risk for tornadoes. Again, we're going to go over that coming up in just a little bit. But that severe weather threat for today covers the entire viewing area as a level 3. Damaging winds, that hail and tornado threat is what we'll be watching through the afternoon and evening. We'll start this off at 7 a.m. This is a look at our satellite and radar loop, and you can see that everything that developed back to our west has dissipated. So we're looking at a lull in the activity right now, which is definitely good to see. Again, you can see as we zoom in, not really anything happening over our area right now. Another look at dual Doppler 5000 radar shows that nothing has started to bubble up just yet. If we see any storms develop out ahead of our main line, it could happen between 4 and 5 o'clock. But this version of Futurecast doesn't show much of that. It shows a tiny shower around 2 o'clock. But we see 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock sort of passes by with a good bit of sunshine. The more sunshine we see, the better chance that these storms will be strong to severe. So at around 7 or 8 o'clock, we see a pretty powerful looking cell moving into the triangle. There it is at 9, and we'll see that expanding a bit at 10 with more of a line by midnight, and then that starts to move out by around 2 a.m. or so. So we're talking about dinner time through the early morning hours tomorrow as this whole thing moves from west to east. So again, looking at everything starting to pick up right around dinner time, 7 or 8 o'clock, and then starting to taper off closer to midnight or so. Coming up, we're going to talk a bit more about the timeline and what we're expecting out of this very unusual situation.
Thanks, Elizabeth. The Kremlin is scrambling to project control after a dramatic armed rebellion over the weekend posed the biggest challenge to Russian President Vladimir Putin in more than 20 years of rule. NBC's Kelly Cobier explains how Putin and his cabinet attempted to reestablish a sense of normalcy.
President Zelensky said the rebellion in Russia was a sign of chaos and weakness in that country. But can the Ukrainians take advantage of that? That is the question. The Ukrainian military today released video of what it says is its soldiers planting the flag in a village that was controlled by the Russians, taking over what they say is the ninth village since their offensive began. The deputy defense minister here in Ukraine also saying that they have made gains on the southern front, retaking about 50 square miles of territory there. But can they take advantage of Wagner forces no longer being on the battlefield? And will Wagner forces actually return as part of the Russian military? These were some of the most effective soldiers on the Russian side. They played a crucial role in the battle for Bakhmut in the east. We spoke to the spokesperson for the Eastern forces today, and he said he's seen no tactical change among the Russian forces since the events of this past weekend, but he does believe there will be a big impact on Russian morale. He said Prigozhin has a large reach. He has a lot of social media channels, and Russian soldiers listen to what he has to say, and they will have heard the message over the weekend that the military in Russia has been hiding casualty numbers and, in his view, calling the justification for the war in Ukraine a lie. Kelly Kobieya, NBC News, Kyiv.
Our county-by-county coverage takes us to Harnett and Henderson counties. A new monument in Harnett County honors the lives of the African-American members of the community. The new memorial is at Wilkins Cemetery in Dunn, the older African-American cemetery in the county. It features 19 names of people who were born and then died in Harnett County between 1838 and 1977. They are among the hundreds of people believed to be buried in unmarked graves in the cemetery. The city of Henderson will be cleaning up Elmwood Cemetery this week. Workers will be removing any items that are banned under city rules. If you have anything there you would like to keep, you should go pick it up now. Items will be removed and thrown out without notice. Tonight, we'll get a look at the progress on a plan to build a huge sports complex in Durham. The County Board of Commissioners will hear an update at 7 p.m. on the proposal for the project. The goal is to get children from low-income families to play sports with the hopes of preventing youth violence and improving health. The sports complex, as proposed, would seat 5,000 people and include more than a dozen courts and multipurpose fields. A final proposal is expected this fall.
Disability advocates are shedding light on an ongoing process called informal removals. It's a strategy some school districts use to take students with disabilities out of the classroom, usually because of behavioral issues. Ted Lindner shares one mother's story.
It's something you may not be familiar with, but it's happening in school districts across the country. Something called informal removals. The process involves schools taking students with disabilities out of the classroom. sometimes dismissing them from school early or reducing their in-person learning to only a couple hours a week. Most of the time, school officials say the removals are the result of safety concerns for the student, their peers, and teachers.
It's not asking much to send your kid to school for at least one whole day.
Chloe Warren, who has autism, only goes to school one day a week for just 2 hours. Her mom, Alyssa, says their school district in Oregon told her that Chloe needed shorter days last year.
She was having autism outbursts, and she threw a desk at a teacher and was fighting with a student, and they were like, all right, we're going to remove her from in-person learning.
But Alyssa says the school failed to provide Chloe with the proper support and argues the removal is impacting her daughter's education and social skills. She's now suing Chloe's school and school district, claiming disability discrimination.
I don't think they see really the impact that they have on families.
According to the National Disability Rights Network, informal removals like these happen hundreds, if not thousands, of times per year. But because they're often marked as off-the-book suspensions, schools aren't required to report them like actual suspensions, which means they're harder to track. Disability advocates say the removals violate students' civil rights.
That was Ted Lindner reporting. Federal law prohibits schools from preventing children with disabilities from receiving an education that's similar to kids without disabilities. It's also against the law for schools to list a lack of funding as the reason for not properly teaching a child with disabilities. But some disability advocates say not all states enforce the law to the fullest extent and say informal removals are an easier strategy for schools instead of working to solve the behavioral disruptions.
An alarming trend of people hit and killed by a car when out walking. How that number has spiked to its highest point in decades.
Plus, rescue teams are searching for survivors after a building collapsed in Egypt. What we know about the people trapped in that rubble. Another push to address mental health and substance abuse in North Carolina. Today, a group of state leaders discussed the current challenges and ways to address it. WRL's Michelle McConaughey is in the Life Center taking a look at everything that they discussed with this as these state lawmakers, as well as medical professionals and advocates for recovery, agree that the programs help mental health and substance abuse, and they've been underfunded and stigmatized for years. This is video from over in Charlotte right now. Senator Tom Tillis is there, and this roundtable is part of this discussion, offering his own experience with what he called a brief mental health crisis. Said it opened the eyes of the current systems and programs that were in place. The panel is discussing current laws, the successes and the failures and gaps. It comes just 1 year after passage of the bipartisan Safer Communities Act. And Senator Jim Bergen says the issues affect everybody and should be treated with care.
It is going to happen in your family. It's going to happen with a loved one. I say everybody in their life will have some kind of a mental health issue. It might be depression and the loss of a loved one or, breakup of a marriage or financial issues. But it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's just when it's going to happen in your life and how we're going to deal with that.
It was a wide-ranging discussion, a lot of time talking about insurance coverage for treatment and medication, how physical and mental issues can often go hand in hand. They also talked about the strong correlation between incarceration and issues of mental health and substance abuse.
We have an important recall involving batteries in some baby monitors. Infant Tech has recalled batteries in its Zuby video baby monitors used in cars. The Consumer Product Safety Commission says the monitor's battery can malfunction, overheat, and burst, posing a fire hazard. There have been 3 reports of monitors catching fire. Fortunately, no one was hurt. People should remove the batteries and contact Infant Tech for a free replacement battery. The number of pedestrian deaths has hit a 40-year high. According to a report from the Governor's Highway Safety Association, more than 7,500 people were killed last year across the country after being struck by vehicles while walking along or across roads. Around 69% of fatalities happened in areas with no sidewalks. 18% of fatalities were on freeways.
About 86 million American adults have high cholesterol, but only about half are taking medicine to lower it. New research shows taking a cholesterol-lowering drug before heart problems happen can significantly reduce risk for heart-related complications and death in high-risk individuals. Doctors at the CDC focused on 4,200 people who had high cholesterol and other heart risk factors, but had not experienced a heart-related event. Participants were given either bempedoic, or that's the acid, or a placebo instead of that. And results show that after 6 months of treatment, bempedoic acid reduced LDL, the bad cholesterol, by 23%.
We think the message is people that have risk factors need to discuss with their doctor whether they would benefit from taking a cholesterol-lowering medicine. That might be a statin, might be bempedoic acid, but they shouldn't leave high cholesterol untreated because they haven't yet had a heart-related event.
Patients with high cholesterol and risk factors are undertreated in the United States. Only about half of them are actually receiving cholesterol-lowering medications like statins. Severe drought in parts of our nation could result in a shortage of vital crops. How this could affect your budget.
Also, a frantic search for survivors after a 13-story building collapsed. People are feared trapped beneath the rubble. Where this happened when the news continues.
Search and recovery crews are on the scene of a building collapse in the Egyptian city of Alexandria. This is video of that area. A 13-story building collapsed this morning. A live video posted on the city's Facebook page showed civil defense units attempting to put a small fire out in that rubble. It's unclear if there were people inside at the time. Apartments in the building were used as rental units for domestic tourists spending summer in the Mediterranean city. At least one person is dead. Nine others are injured after riders plunged from a derailed roller coaster in Sweden. The derailment happened at lunchtime when the amusement park was full of people. Witnesses described a chaotic scene as the train jumped the tracks before coming to a stop. Now, police launched a criminal investigation on possible charges of involuntary manslaughter, causing bodily harm and causing danger to others.
Ongoing drought continues to threaten the successful harvest of vital cash crops, pushing some farmers to the limit. Ted Lindner takes a closer look at what's under attack.
Moderate to extreme drought conditions causing turmoil for farmers across large portions of the Midwest and Great Plains, with cash crops like wheat, corn, and soybeans struggling to survive.
We could have a dry month, and that may not be a problem. But if it's at a critical time of vegetative development, this could be a disaster.
Some climate experts say the problem isn't necessarily a lack of precipitation, but more so when the rain actually falls.
The springtime and even the fall might be even wetter than normal, but the summers are drier than normal. If they have too wet of fields in the spring, that's going to delay planting. But then as soon as it dries out in the field, it could be dry for weeks, if not months.
The U.S. is one of the top five wheat exporters in the world. But instead of preparing to harvest their crops, many wheat farmers in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas are now walking away from their fields. The drought impacting the health and growth of wheat, causing roughly a third to go without being harvested this season. Corn, which is used in many food products and for animal feed, is facing a similar fate.
The bigger the corn gets, the more water it's going to start to take up. Drought is so important because it's going to impact corn, how much grain it's going to produce, how much biomass, plant matter it's going to produce.
Soybean yield is also a main concern, with agricultural experts urging farmers to always speak up as soon as conditions worsen.
Relay that information. We need to be mindful of this.
You feel for those communities. We are not in a drought situation, thankfully, but we will have some more rain storms on the way, and some of those could be severe.
Yeah, and we just got a brand new run of what we're looking at for this WRL weather alert day. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRL Severe Weather Center.
Yeah, the storm prediction puts out this risk for severe storms, and they typically do an update around 12:30, and they did update this. Now, of course, our entire viewing area was already under that level 3, which is this orange level, but they expanded it to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. So it covers a good chunk of North Carolina, definitely all of the Triad area, not quite to Charlotte, but down
down toward Wilmington and from Greensboro all the way over to the coast. So a big area covered in this level 3 risk for severe storms. It looks like damaging wind is going to be the biggest threat for us this evening. Hail is possible that's large enough to do damage, and an isolated tornado is not out of the question, but this system doesn't have a big history with tornadoes. Here's a look. This is brand new as well. This is a look at where the Storm Prediction Center has said it looks like it's going to put out a severe thunderstorm watch, and that does include almost our entire viewing area from I-95 westward back over toward the Triad and Charlotte. So a severe thunderstorm watch is likely, 95% chance that they will issue that in the next couple of hours. So we give that another 2 hours or so, we'll likely be going under that watch. Watching the cold front swinging eastward, we did have some showers and thunderstorms in the mountains earlier today. All of that has fizzled out now, but look at what's happened in the last 24 hours. We've seen at least 374 wind damage reports. That's the white circle. The blue circles are hail reports, 188, but only 4 tornado damage reports. And so you can see with almost 400 wind damage reports, only 4 tornado reports. So this system doesn't have a history of producing a lot of tornadoes, but a lot of damaging winds for sure, and the potential for some hail as well. So that's what we're looking at as the storm continues to move eastward. Nothing's popping up just yet. This is a brand new run of the computer model. You can see at 5 o'clock, one of those cells way to our north back up into Virginia. Here's 7 o'clock. We've been watching these cells moving into our area by 7 o'clock, but this brand new run of the model is a little bit slower. Now we're starting to see that more like 8 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, it's say just north and south of Durham with a cell down here in Southern Pines. And then they continue to develop a little more slowly back to the west at 10 o'clock here in Southern Pines over toward Rocky Mount. And just gradually this continues to push eastward, looking at still a number of storms down to the south there at midnight. And we still have some ongoing activity as late as around 4 a.m. This red shaded area is where we could have damaging winds at 60 miles per hour or stronger. A 30% of the people in this area could see those, see that wind damage. And then here in the large hail risk, 15% of folks living in that area could see the large hail that could cause some damage. Rainfall totals are likely to be about 1/4 inch to maybe 3/4 inch, depending on where you are. We do have a level 2 risk for flooding out of the system. All right, we're going to switch gears and talk about the tropics. Right here, the remnants of Cindy that we were tracking at the end of last week. And now it looks like those remnants could possibly redevelop somewhere around Bermuda in the next 7 days. It doesn't look like anything that's going to affect the United States, except maybe some rip current danger. So our WRL weather alert day continues with that chance for some strong, severe thunderstorms with damaging winds, straight line winds. We also are going to see a hot afternoon at 94 with a heat index into the low 100s.